For the first time in 3 years, I got to see the Mariners in person yesterday. And that's the extent of our discussion about last night's game. Instead, let's talk about some trade candidates on today's episode of Locked On Mariners. Colby, hit it.
You are Locked On Mariners, your daily Seattle Mariners podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Tuesday, May 17th, 2022, and this is Locked On Mariners Podcast. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for making us your first listen of the day. We are free and available on all platforms. I am your host, Tadding Gonzalez, reporter and editor over at allseahawks.com, joined as always by my co-host, Colby Patnode. Be sure to follow the show on Twitter at @LO_Mariners. You can follow me at Dane Gonzalez, that's DaneGNZLZ, and Colby at CPAT11, that's CPAT11. Be sure to also check out our Patreon, where we talk about the Mariners even more and also get into some non-baseball talk twice a week. Visit patreon.com/controlthezone for more information on that if you are interested and want more of us. And if this is your first time joining us here on the Locked On Mariners podcast, welcome to the show. If you like what you hear, give us a follow or subscribe wherever you listen to this. And if you're watching us on YouTube, hit the subscribe button, turn on the notification bell, and give this video a thumbs up. We greatly appreciate it. We're going to be not talking about last night's game, because I already had to sit through that pain with 20,000 screaming Canadians all around me. So I've lived through that enough as much as I want to. So we're going to be talking about some trade candidates, because Colby, I think you and I can both agree here that the Mariners need more probability in their lineup. We're also going to be previewing tonight's game, because that one's set up to be a little more fun than last night. We got Logan Gilbert on the bump for the Mariners going up against Jose Barrios, who's been struggling. So there might be an opportunity there for the Mariners. But first, we're going to actually talk about Emerson Hancock, who is making his season debut in 2022 after dealing with a lat injury that had held him out for a while. He's going to be making his debut tonight in Double A Arkansas. Colby, obviously this guy just a couple years removed from being a top six pick in the 2020 draft. A lot of high expectations for him. Some people around the league, we've talked about this during the offseason, have kind of tempered their expectations with him now. He's starting to get that reliever tag, the lazy reliever tag, of course. But remind us, who are we getting in Emerson Hancock, and what should we be looking out for?
Yeah, so with Hancock, you're getting a soon-to-be 23-year-old who was entering the 2020 college season was the consensus number one overall pick. He didn't throw particularly well for Georgia. He wasn't bad, but he wasn't as elite as you would like. And then COVID shut the whole thing down. He fell to the sixth pick where the Mariners took him, largely based on four so-so starts at the beginning of his draft year, and also some concerns that the fastball wasn't going to generate enough value at the major league level. But ultimately what Hancock is he's a 6'4", about 220 pound. He's good size, good build. When he's right, he throws plenty of strikes. Fastball is, velocity-wise, it's fine. It's 93 to 97. There are some concerns about the shape of the pitch. It doesn't have tremendous rise or run to it. It's not a pitch that is going to dominate for example, Logan Gilbert's fastball can. But it should be good enough. The Mariners might try to maybe do a two-seamer. They need to generate some kind of value off the fastball. But velocity is there, and he throws it with enough command that it should be an above-average pitch at least. What kind of separates Hancock is that he has two, I would say, plus off-speed pitches. The slider is probably his best. It's right up there with anybody's in the organization's, not named Matt Brash. It's pretty good pitch last time we saw it. The changeup is a pitch that could become a legitimate third-plus pitch. It has good fade. He throws it with good arm action. He needs to control it a little bit better, but it could end up being his best pitch when all is said and done. So, and honestly, the curveball, not too bad. It's probably about fringe average. But when you look at Hancock overall, what you see is a guy who is, good build, athletic, should be able to throw strikes. Not going to be a huge issue for him. Fastball is going to be in the mid-90s. We'll see if they can add some run or some kind of deception to it. The slider and changeup are both going to be above average. The changeup, probably the best chance to be the plus pitch here. And the curveball is going to be at least average, I believe. And he's gonna, like I said, he's going to throw plenty of strikes. It's probably 55 control, 50 command when all is said and done. And if he can stay healthy, it's hard to envision him not being at least a mid-rotation starter. He's got all of that working for him.
Yeah, so that's the key, though, right, is if he can stay healthy, which has been an issue for him over the last year or so. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's really, really impeded his start to the, to his professional career. So my question then, really going off of that, because this is a guy that, you know, there was some talk that maybe this would be the year that he would make his major league debut. Obviously, that's not going to happen this year, considering that he's just now starting his season in Double A. When do you think we could see him, assuming that he stays healthy and everything kind of comes along for him as expected?
And he stays in the organization.
That's true too. Yes. Little tease there for the next segment, right?
I don't know if you had anybody on your list that require Emerson Hancock, but I still think next year is a very real possibility. It could be as soon as May. If Hancock can string together and stay relatively healthy over the next 4 or 5 months, whatever's left in the minor league season, he's probably going to start next year either at AAA or with an outside shot to make the big league roster. Like I said, it's not going to take him long to get to the big leagues if he can just sustain his health for a lengthy period of time. The stuff is already really good. The last time we saw it, the stuff was really good. We'll see how he bounces back from the two injuries. It might take him a few outings to kind of get his feel, but there's no really long-term concerns that I would project right now. So I still think, sometime next year is a very realistic possibility. I wouldn't say it's out of the question that he's, depending on how he's feeling and if he has innings left, maybe he gets called up in September to pitch out of the bullpen. It's an outside shot, but I don't think they're going to run that risk of, putting him on the 40-man before they have to. I would just say that I would say May, June of 2023 is probably the earliest we're going to see him. But again, he can move very quickly. He's already in Double A. He's an advanced pitcher. He was advanced when they drafted him. He was probably a Double A quality starter when they drafted him. It's just injuries have really gotten in the way. So I still think next year should be the expectation. And he could move pretty quick. I think he's probably in the big leagues, if not before he turns 24, pretty soon after he turns 24, which will be May 31st of 2023.
Cool. All right. So let's talk about some trade candidates, because again, this Mariners lineup, as we saw last night, just needs more probability. It needs, some guys there towards the back end of the lineup that can pick up the slack when the top of the lineup isn't really, doing the job. So yeah, we're gonna try to figure this out, because it's still very early and the trade market is not going to be busy whatsoever. It's not going to be very fruitful for the Mariners. So we got to be pretty selective here with some of these guys. And it's going to be a pretty limited market to pick through right now. But real quick, let me tell you about our friends over at Built Bar. Imagine dipping your finger into that plastic tub of birthday cake frosting and then opening your eyes and realizing that was only 150 calories and 16 grams of protein. That's what it's like to eat a birthday cake puff from Built. I just received my birthday cake puffs and I have never had anything like this before. They're available right now and we can't promise that they will be there tomorrow. So go get them today at Built.com and make every day your birthday with Built's birthday cake puffs. Built has taken the delicious experience of biting into a fresh slice of birthday cake and robed it in 100% white chocolate and added sprinkles. And with 150 calories, 16 grams of protein, and only 9 grams of sugar, this limited time flavor is an amazing option if you are looking for a healthy way to get flavor and variety in your day. And all Built Puffs are covered in 100% real chocolate. That means with Built, you can eat healthy and actually enjoy doing it. So go try some for yourself over at Built.com. Use promo code LOCKED15, that's LOCKED15, for 15% off your order. Again, that's LOCKED15. For 15% off your order at built.com. You're listening to Locked On Mariners. Thank you again for making us your first listen of the day. For your next listen, check out the Locked On Now podcast with recaps of MLB games with analysis from our local experts, taking fans through the season like no other network. It is free and available wherever you get your podcasts, just like us. So, Colby, you and I, we love talking about trades. That's probably our favorite thing to do. Our favorite thing that we have done together for the last, I don't know, 4 or so years of podcasting and writing together. And the Mariners are in desperate need of making a trade. So while the product on the field has been frustrating to watch, this is actually kind of exciting for us because we actually get to look into some trade possibilities earlier than maybe either one of us expected. And we're going to be strictly looking at players that can help boost this lineup. And like I said earlier, the market is going to be vastly limited at a time like this. Probably only a couple teams, if that, are going to be interested in actually selling off major league pieces right now. So again, very limited group that we're pulling from here. So you mentioned the Ben Gamel, Chris Stratton idea that you had on an episode last week. And that was kind of your version, like the 2022 version of the Alex Colomé and Denard Span deal that the Mariners made in May of 2018. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's an angle that we could take with this. But overall, you know, I've pulled a few names that I like that are on bad teams or teams that maybe they're not really bad right now in terms of the standings, in terms of the win-loss column, but the likelihood of them competing is just non-existent. So it would be wise for, you know, a team like the Pirates, right? Or a team like the Orioles, who, you know, they're winning some ball games right now, but considering where they are in their divisions, the competition that they have, just their ceiling in general, right? So I'm going to start here with Robbie Grossman, who's on the Tigers. And the Tigers, surprisingly, have really underachieved, at least relative to expectations going into the season. They're 13-23 right now. They're at the bottom of the AL Central, 13-23, like I said. Grossman got off to a pretty good start, but has fallen back quite a bit. Lately, he's just hitting 204, 333, 241. 241 slugging is gross. That's terrible. 84 WRC plus, 14.4 walk rate though, but a 31.8% K rate. So some really bad notes on Robbie Grossman, to be certain. But again, we're working with a very limited group here, and we're looking for some sort of upside. Grossman last year, however, slashed 239, 357, 415 with 114 WRC plus. The year before that, his last season with the A's, of course, this was shortened season 2020, but he slashed 241, 344, 482 with a 127 WRC plus. So this guy has shown the ability to hit. He's familiar with the AL West. Also, I believe the last time that I looked at his Baseball Savant page, he was 89th percentile in outfielder jump, which that's better than Dylan Moore in right field. Just going to say that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, only 21st percentile in outs above average. But this is a good speed guy, so that would be nice to add some speed to the lineup. But this is a very much a CTZ guy. Chase rate, 98th percentile. Walk percentage, 93rd percentile. He's going to take walks. Probably strikes out a little too much to be super high on the CTZ scale or whatever the Mariners use when evaluating hitters, whatever they call it. Yeah, there's certainly some upside here. He's better than he's performing right now. He's a switch hitter, which helps quite a bit. And he should play a decent enough outfield that he's not going to absolutely kill you. And honestly, you know, you're running Jesse Winker out there every single day. Do you really care about outfield defense that much? He's an interesting guy.
Well, and this could also present an opportunity where maybe you can get Winker in the DH spot a little bit more, put Grossman out in left field, I would say, you know, even though that I pointed out Dylan Moore's defense earlier, I would say that Moore is probably a better defender out in the outfield than Jesse Winker. So maybe a Moore, Rodriguez, Grossman outfield wouldn't be terrible. Also, you know, Adam Frazier's been okay out there so far. So that's obviously another possibility. And if they want to put Frazier out in the outfield more, that actually kind of leads into my next player. Ramon Urias, who is struggling this year, to say the least. Again, keep in mind here, we are picking from a very limited bunch. He only has a WRC plus of 60. He's slashing 210, 257, 290. But he's just a year removed from slashing 279, 361, 412 for 115 WRC plus. And then the year before that, shortened season again. Oh, wait, that was only in 10 games. So we're actually going to just ignore that and we're going to completely move away from that. But last year was pretty good for Urias. And we were told last year that the Mariners at one point checked in with the Orioles about infield help. And I would presume that Urias was one of the names that got mentioned. This is a 27-year-old guy who can hit for some power a little bit and gets on base, walks quite a bit, and doesn't chase at all. And just hits the living hell out of the ball when he does make contact. 92nd percentile right now in hard hit rate this year. So again, this is kind of same idea as Grossman, where you're buying very, very low on someone that's really struggling right now, but has shown some signs of success the last year or two. What do you think about Urias?
Yeah, I like the player. Like you said, he doesn't really chase. You know, it's a 92nd percentile in average exit velocity, 76th percentile in X batting average. So, you know, the batted ball profile suggests he should be hitting a lot higher than 210. And he's not a great defender really anywhere, but he's not terrible anywhere in the infield. You'd like to avoid using him at shortstop if you can. But that's true of basically everybody who's not a pure shortstop. I mean, you'd like to avoid using Dylan Moore at shortstop if you can. And he's probably fringy at second and third base, but what you're buying here is the bat rebounds and that the underlying numbers of the low chase rate and the high exit velocities indicate that he's going to break out, so to speak, yeah. And he's going to produce at least, you know, league average numbers down the line.
Yeah, he's also been a reverse splits guy this year, sitting 232 against righties, just 161 against lefties, which, let's see here. Is that the same for him 2021? Yes, it was. He hit 315 against righties in 2021 and 235 against the lefties in 2021.
I mean, this year, Jesse Winker and J.P. Crawford have hit better against lefties than they have righties. So,
yeah,
it's weird, but it happens.
Yeah, it's a weird year. So the last name that I'll mention, and Colby, I think you have maybe at least one name to go over, but the last name that I'll mention here is Michael A. Taylor of the Royals. And the Royals are kind of in a tailspin right now. They're 12-21. They just fired their hitting coach. They might entertain trading a guy or two off of their roster at this point. Taylor is 31 years old. He's going to be a free agent after this season. No, he's not going to be a free agent after this season.
No, signed an extension.
Yeah, he signed an extension. Okay. Yeah, I was going off of spot track at first, but Fangraphs has the actual stuff here. All right, so Taylor has been slashing 229, 330, 323. Obviously, you know, 323 slugging, that doesn't really jump out. But he does have some sneaky pop here and there. So I wouldn't completely discredit that. He's also, a sensational defender. And he gives you another option in center field. He could just straight up boost your, you know, right field defense or your left field defense, what have you. Because I assume that they're probably not moving Julio out of center, considering the way he's playing. And why would they right now? He's playing, you know, pretty good ball out there. But Taylor, you know, he gets on base. He's walking 13.4% of the time. He's only striking out 20.5% of the time. And he's also a threat to steal some bases. He stole 14 last year. He doesn't have a steal this year, but he had a career high 24 steals in 2018, so that gives you a bit more of a base path presence. And He's graded out positively as a base runner as well, which base running's kind of been an issue for the Mariners this year at times. So, so I think, you know, you upgrade defensively, you get someone that can get on base pretty consistently, and someone that's actually going to run the bases properly and probably avoid, some of the boneheaded mistakes that we've seen, some of the toot blands that we've seen over the last few weeks. It will probably cost the Mariners a little bit here. This is probably the most expensive guy that I've mentioned on this list because of the extension now, you know, taking that into account. He's also been basically a league average hitter, 99 WRC plus, 100 is the average mark. So, that's going to cost something, especially this early, but I think they could pull it off. I think this is also a good opportunity here because the Royals have a pretty solid bullpen where they could actually do a Denard Span, Alex Colome type of thing here with Taylor and one of the relievers, whether that's Barlow or whoever. What do you think about Taylor, though?
My concern is that Dayton Moore is going to ask for Jared Kelnick, which we know is apparently the move for Dayton Moore, is just to ask for ridiculous prices for good players.
By the way, what do you think what Merrifield will cost right now? Because he's running a WRC plus of 42, which is actually a significant improvement from where he was. Because he had a WRC plus of 1 the last time I looked, which was like about a week ago.
Yeah, he's turning around a little bit. Probably though, because he's got a few less years of club control at this point, I'm going to say probably get him for George Kirby. I can't take the Royals too seriously when you hear that they were asking for Julio Rodriguez for Whit Merrifield last year. Taylor's a good player though. He would be a really nice fit at the bottom of the lineup. Like you said, he gets on base a fair amount. He's actually been pretty good this year. Ex WOBA at 63rd percentile. Doesn't strike out a ton. He will strike out some, but it's still above league average. He walks a lot. He's very fast. Good defender. He's probably going to be one of the best right fielders in baseball if you wanted to use him there. He's actually got a little more power than people think. I mean, he's got a 450 X slug this year, 391 the year before, 480 the year before. So there's some pop here. It's a lot of slap singles and a lot of, there's been a few infield singles this year. Sure, absolutely. But there's some power. He does have 2 home runs. He has a triple. He's got a double. And he's a good defender. So, yeah, I mean, I would prefer Andrew Benintendi, but he's probably going to cost more, though he is a rental. But yeah, Kansas City is one of those teams where they may think they're in it right now or they don't want to quite sell yet. But I think by June 1, reality is going to come crashing down and they're just going to have to accept that, they weren't as close as they thought they were when they spent some money last offseason.
Yeah, they're 12-21. Like I said, they're 7.5 back right now in the Central. The Twins are playing pretty good ball right now. The White Sox are starting to turn things around after their, awful start to the year with all the injuries and everything. So if I'm the Royals, I'm looking at that and going, it's probably not the year. So I don't know. If the Mariners came to them with, Who would be someone that you would be willing to part with for Michael A. Taylor?
I don't know if I'd be willing to part with them, but I would guess that the Royals would ask for somebody like Bryce Miller.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah, I don't think I would do that, but also I wouldn't be super upset if they did. Does that make sense? But
It would make sense if they did it.
Yeah.
If I saw it, I'd be like, wow, that hurts to lose Miller, but also I get it.
I think that's, I think that's probably what realistically they would ask for. But again, it's Kansas City. You never know what they're going to do. Yeah. Just real fast, my guy teased him on Twitter last night at Control the Zone on Twitter. I think it's time to bring Daniel Cornelius Vogel back to the Seattle Mariners. He's hitting 252, 339, 476 this year. He has a 130 WRC plus in 30 games, 6 home runs so far. He is running a 12% walk rate and a 24% K rate. X WOBA of 386, He's been worth half a win already. And again, nobody is suggesting that Daniel Vogelbach is a long-term fix. We're not looking for long-term fixes here. We're looking for Band-Aids. And, you know, when you kind of look at what the Mariners are running out there right now, Mike Ford is kind of the primary DH. That's
hey, he worked a walk last night. I was proud of
him. No, Mike Ford, he had a nice hit. Like I'm a Mike Ford guy. Yeah, but yeah. No. Come on. Let's do better. You look at
obviously these names that we're talking about, they're not going to excite a lot of people, but it's going for someone that offers you maybe a bit more upside than someone like Steven Souza Jr. or Mike Ford. You know, they're still Band-Aids, but Band-Aids with upside.
Well, it's one of those things, like a lot of Mariner fans think that the team needs surgery, so they don't want a Band-Aid. It's like, well, yeah, but if you don't put pressure on your wound and you just wait to get to the hospital before you try and do anything, you're going to bleed out.
Yeah.
Sorry to use a gruesome metaphor, but I think it makes sense. You got to put pressure on it to kind of stop the bleeding, and then you can kind of address the bigger issue. I just wrote this out real fast. I know we got to run, but I just wanted to throw this just to let people know the difference that these minor moves can make in the lineup. So on the 15th, which is kind of the last regular lineup that the Mariners use against the Mets, it's very similar to today's lineup as well. They went Frazier, France, Crawford, Winker, Rodriguez, Ford, Toro, Souza Jr., and Cal Raleigh, mm-hmm. right? If they make a couple of these moves here, we're talking about Frazier, France, JP, Winker, Julio, Vogelbach hitting sixth,
mm-hmm.
Whoever's playing third base hitting seven, Ben Gamel is the guy I put Michael A. Taylor in there, whoever is hitting eighth, and then you have the catcher spot, which may be Murphy pretty soon. It sounds like there's a shot that it's Murphy. And what this does is that it moves, you know, Souza Jr. to the bench until Kyle Lewis is ready to go, which hopefully is in a couple weeks. We'll see. And it moves everybody down. And now in the six hole, you have a guy who's a career 105 WRC plus hitter instead of Mike Ford. And in the eight hole, you have Ben Gamel, who is a career 99 WRC plus instead of Steven Souza Jr., who is frankly not been good since he was called up. So that's a sizable difference. Because basically what you've done is you've added two league average bats. You've added some power, some lefty power into your lineup with Vogelbach, and you've added kind of this high probability, going to hit for some average, going to draw some walks guys towards the bottom of your order, which is perfect because Frazier, France, JP, and Winker right now, kind of your whole offense, and Julio. So, mm-hmm. yeah, adding guys in the back half of that to kind of, again, boost power but also on base skill, huge. So just even those making two of those small moves, if it's Vogelbach and Taylor, you have a lineup that one through – or I would say what, seven or eight of the nine, you feel pretty good about on an at bat per at bat basis.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so we're gonna preview tonight's game. Got Logan Gilbert versus Jose Barrios. I'm gonna be heading to the game after we're done recording and getting this thing posted. But real quick, before we get into all that, got to remind you that today's episode of Locked On Mariners is brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning, like is your Odyssey an LX or an EX, and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing the only brand their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket, so why choose to spend 30%, 50%, even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or car dealership? For example, a Honda Odyssey fuel pump is $353 from a chain store, whereas with Rock Auto, it's only $216. Plus, Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years, and their prices are reliably low for every customer. So go to rockauto.com right after you're done listening to us and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in there, how did you hear about us box, so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. So again, we got Logan Gilbert, Jose Barrios going up against one another. In Toronto tonight, Adam Frazier back in the starting lineup for the Mariners after going 2-for-2 as a pinch hitter last night and driving in one of the Mariners' two runs. So that's good. Abraham Toro is out of the leadoff spot. That is very good. And look, I am not a Toro hater like some of you weirdos on Twitter, but the guy absolutely should not be hitting leadoff. He should not be guaranteed the most at-bats in a lineup that has Julio Rodriguez, Ty France, Jesse Winker, Eugenio Suarez, etc., and J.P. Crawford. Yeah, absolutely. Yesterday, just to make one comment on yesterday, if I had to change anything, I would absolutely put J.P. Crawford in the leadoff spot instead of Abraham Toro there. Or Jesse Winker, really. It doesn't matter. But either one of those guys would be much better than Toro. Just imagine that at-bat with one out, bases loaded, one out, and instead of Toro, you have Jesse Winker or J.P. Crawford up in that spot. Like,
yep.
We might be talking about a different ball game. Wyatt Mills probably doesn't come in the next inning. They probably go with someone, you know, a little more high leverage there in that situation. And who knows, right? But they end up losing 6-2. Anyway, so let's talk about, you know, how they could potentially bounce back here with Gilbert on the bump. Gilbert has struggled last couple of outings relative to his standards, of course. And he obviously got, you know, pushed around a little bit by the Blue Jays last year, the last time that he faced this team in Seattle. You mentioned it yesterday that, you know, Blue Jays love hunting the fastball, and that's Gilbert's best pitch. Sometimes it's his only pitch. So how would you like to see him attack the Blue Jays tonight?
Yeah. So the one area where Gilbert could take advantage is that the Jays are going to be aggressive on the fastball, but they also are willing to expand the zone. So you can get them to chase off the zone. The slider is going to be huge for Gilbert tonight. He has to throw it often. It's not a pitch that he can just – you're not going to just blow the first pitch fastball by these guys and then set up everything off of that first pitch fastball. You have to throw the slider. It's got to be good. And if you can spot the slider, if you can even throw a couple for strikes early, then you have a chance to dominate this lineup, because Gilbert's fastball slider changeup against a righty heavy lineup has been the ticket to his most dominant outings. You remember the Yankees start last year, the Red Sox start last year. That's what it all comes down to. The fastball control, which he's had issues with over his last few starts, we'll know how it is. He misses arm side when he's not feeling right. And the slider just off the outside corner, maybe even spot a couple of them, throw a few, get me over curveballs and changeups to kind of seal a strike early. That's what it's going to be about. Can Logan Gilbert pitch backwards? I don't know. Can he pitch backwards relative to the way Gilbert normally pitches? I hope so. And if he does, then he has a shot to be successful tonight, assuming that the fastball control is good. But if it is what it's been for the last, you know, 3-4 starts, it could get pretty dicey. But if he has the fastball control, if he can dot the fastball and then throw the slider near the strike zone, he has a chance to have a very good outing tonight.
Mm-hmm. On the flip side, Jose Barrios going for the Blue Jays. He's struggled mightily this year. Last two starts, the first of which was against the Guardians. He only went 4 2/3, gave up 6 earned runs. And didn't strike out anyone in that, which is pretty abnormal for him. Strikeouts have been pretty low for him this year. Then against the Yankees in New York last week, he goes 5 1/3 and gives up 5 earned runs, only striking out 4, gives up a home run in that game. You go to his Baseball Savant page, it is a lot of blue. I was also at his first start of the year on opening day. And he, I believe, didn't even record a single out before he came out of the game. He gave up 7 runs to the Rangers. So this is definitely a guy that the Mariners can jump on. Now, what it really comes down to is, will the Mariners lineup show up tonight? Because they really didn't last night. 9 left on base. You know the story. It was one of those games. It was one of many that we've seen this year that pretty much went along the same script. I mean, do you just going off of what you saw last night, are you still hopeful that they can get something done here against Barrios? Because I mean, they go in against Kikuchi, who has been better as of late, but it's still, I mean, we know who Yusei Kikuchi is. You and I both, everyone watching this knows who Yusei Kikuchi is. Couldn't do anything against him. Haven't been able to do anything against other struggling pitchers. Barrios is struggling. but he has good stuff. You know, this kind of seems like another frustrating outing for the Mariners offense on paper to me.
It's certainly geared up to be. Yeah, I mean, Berríos doesn't have a pitch this so far this year that has been good. The curveball has been his best pitch, but even that, he's had some hard hit ball issues with that pitch. It's not even quite as good as the raw numbers indicate, but it is still a solid pitch for him. He's going to throw 30% of the time. You know, he's going to get some whiffs on it, sure. But you really have to gear up for the fastball and the sinker. That's what he's going to throw, you know, roughly 60% of the time. So you have to gear up for that pitch. You have to be ready to hit those pitches. He's had a hard time getting the fastball down in the zone, but he's also had a hard time getting the fastball at the letters or higher, which is an issue. You either have to be at the knees, or you have to be at the letters with the fastball. He's kind of been in the middle of the plate, and that's been a big issue for him. It's not an overpowering fastball. It's 94 miles an hour. It's not a high spin rate fastball. It's 41st percentile in spin. Berríos doesn't really spin the ball that well. His curveball has always been pretty low spin. It's got wicked movement to it. It's a fun pitch to watch, but it's not insane spin. Like I said, the velocity is not overpowering, although it is slightly above average. But he's going to throw strikes for the most part, always has. So you gotta be ready to hit it. And we've seen Berríos pitch against the Mariners, and he's been, there's been times where he's looked unhittable for 3-4 innings. And then the Mariners put up a 4 spot on him one inning, because he just kind of loses it. So, I would like to say this is a great opportunity for the Mariners to kind of get the bats back to where they were in New York. But, you see Mike Ford, you see Steven Souza, you see Cal Raleigh at the bottom of the order, and you're kind of like, it's tough to predict any kind of outbreak coming on a night-to-night basis. So we'll see. But, it feels like one of those games where either Berríos is going to go 7 shutout, or the Mariners are going to drop, you know, one of their, like, 6-run innings on them in the second or something like that. We'll see. I could see this game being a shootout, like a 7-5, 7-6 type of game, or I could see it being like a 2-1 game. That's incredibly frustrating to watch for both sides.
Yeah, and I'm going to be sitting front row out in right field. I'm literally front row, first row, right field, right by the foul pole. Check me out. Not like the Mariners are going to be hitting any balls out there anyway, so you probably won't see me on TV. But I've gone full cynic the last day or so, considering how my night went last night.
Ty is going to catch a Mike Ford home run tonight.
All right, I'm done.
Put it on the board.
By the way, it's your fault that Matt Chapman won deep last night.
Well, it's your fault the Mariners couldn't hit. So
yeah. We're both at fault, though. I just want the record
to
show.
We have photographic evidence of you cursing the Mariners. That's all I'm going to say.
That is true. Oh man. That picture. I don't think I'm ever going to take that off of my Twitter, by the way. I made that my Twitter header. I don't think that's ever going away, because I think that that pretty much perfectly summarizes my experience as a Mariners fan.
Yep.
All right. Well, I got to get down to the Rogers Center, so we're going to hop off here. That's going to do it for our show. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Locked On Mariners podcast. For Colby Patnode, I'm Tyden Gonzalez. Be sure to give us a follow on Twitter at @LO_Mariners. You can follow me at Dane Gonzalez. That's DaneGNZLZ. And Colby at CPAT11. That's CPAT11. You can also find all that stuff in the description of this episode. And thank you again for making us your first listen of the day, just like you do here every day. Now make your second listen of the day, Locked On MLB. That's where Paul Francis Sullivan, and please call him Sully, brings you his unique perspective on the Major League's present and past. It's free wherever you get your podcasts, just like us. So have yourself a beautiful baseball day, and we will see you tomorrow. Peace.